Let's return to 2 Samuel chapter 3, verse number 17, where Abner, the longtime commander of the United Israeli military, has had a falling out with Ishbaal, the surviving son of the late King Saul, whom Abner has supported as the crowned king of United Israel for the last 2 years. But now that Ishbaal has accused him of something, he has sworn that he will turn the entire kingdom over to David, whom he now believes God wants on the throne. So he contacts David, and David is happy to hear it. His only extra requirement is that Michal, his longtime wife, be returned back to him. Now, that's problematic because she's been married for the last 4 years to another man because her father divorced her from David on the occasion of when David ran away from King Saul's murderous intentions a couple of years before Saul's death. So those arrangements have now been made, and Michal is on her way to Hebron in the party of Abner and others that are going to make all the official arrangements for David to be crowned as the United Israeli king. So 2 Samuel chapter number 3, verse 17. Abner conferred with the elders of Israel, saying, "For some time past, you have been seeking David as king over you." So this is not just the Judean leadership. This is all the other tribal leadership that Abner acknowledges. They were prone already to throw their support behind David. But Abner had insisted 2 years previous, upon the death of Saul, that Ishbaal, the surviving son, the crown prince, should be declared king of United Israel. But now that Abner realizes that's not going to work, he tells the elders, "I know this is what you've wanted for a while. Let's do it." Verse 18. "Now then, bring it about, for he who is has promised David, saying, 'By the hand of my servant David, I will save my people Israel from the hand of the Philistines and from the hand of all their enemies.' Abner also spoke to Benjamin," so that's his own tribe, because he is the cousin of the late King Saul, and they were from the tribe of Benjamin. So he addresses his own tribal group. "And then Abner went to tell David at Hebron all that Israel and the whole house of Benjamin thought good to do." So he has arrived at Hebron with the full backing of the tribal leadership outside of the tribe of Judah, and especially the tribe of Benjamin, his own tribe, the tribe of the last king. And they're all supportive of the idea of David becoming the king of United Israel. Verse 20, "When Abner came with 20 men to David at Hebron, David made a feast for Abner and the men who were with him. And Abner said to David, 'I will arise and go and gather all Israel to my lord the king, that they will make a covenant with you, and that you may reign over all that your heart desires.' And so David sent Abner away, and he went in peace." So we have this banquet, and an agreement is struck, and Abner says, "All right, I've got all the preliminary stuff done. Now I just need to go out there and start making the arrangements for the great big coronation so that everybody can come and acknowledge you as the King of United Israel. And with that being kind of the last thing that he tells David, Abner leaves Hebron, heading north to go and accomplish what he said he's going to do. Verse 22. Just then the servants of David arrived with Joab from a raid, bringing much spoil with them. Now, Joab is David's oldest nephew of his sister's kids. They're right around David's age. And Joab is functioning as David's general of the army of Judah. So he's out there doing general stuff. He's apparently responding to threats, probably from the Philistines. And he's coming back from a successful military operation. And verse 22 continues, but Abner was not with David at Hebron, for he had sent him away and he had gone in peace. When Joab and all the army that was with him came, it was told Joab, Abner, the son of Ner, came to the king, and he has let him go, and he's gone in peace. So as soon as Joab arrives back, it's reported to him by people that are probably supporters of his that Abner was actually at Hebron. And that David did not arrest him, did not hold him for execution, did not treat him as a war criminal. He just made an arrangement with him and let him go in peace. Now, this really burns Joab, because you remember that Abner killed Joab's younger brother, Asahel, in the Civil War fight a couple of years ago. Remember, he'd been chased by Asahel, and he kept warning him off, and Asahel wouldn't leave him alone, and he finally slammed the butt of his spear into Asahel's abdomen, right there in the solar plexus area, probably intending to knock the wind out of him and give Abner more chance to run away. But evidently, Abner's spear butt shattered and it becomes this great big sharp pointy object that jams through his entire abdomen and out his back and kills him. And Joab and Abishai, the two brothers, the two sons of Zeruiah, the older sister of David, they pretty much determined that they would see the death of Abner for what he did to their baby brother. So as soon as Joab finds out that David had entertained Abner and sent him away in peace, verse 24, Joab went to the king and said, what have you done? Behold, Abner came to you. Why is it that you have sent him away so that he is gone? You know that Abner, the son of Ner, came to deceive you and to know you're going out and you're coming in and to know all that you're doing. So he accuses David of being a fool, of not thinking strategically or tactically, to have allowed himself to be spied on by the commander of their enemy army and letting him get away with all that information. And of course, this is all driven by Joab's absolute hatred for Abner because of what he did to Asahel. Verse 26, when Joab came out from David's presence, he sent messengers after Abner, and they brought him back from the cistern of Sirah. Now, we don't know exactly where that's at, but apparently it's a little ways north of Hebron. But David did not know about it. So David is clueless that Joab is operating in this fashion of telling Abner that he needs to come back for a special message or a meeting at Hebron. Verse 27, when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside into the midst of the gate to speak with him privately. So basically, Abner, come here. Let's talk. Now, these guys have known each other for years because just like David, Joab and Abishai and Asahel, the three sons of Zeruiah, served in the army of Israel under Commander Abner, under General Abner. And Joab, no doubt, was very good at what he did military-wise and was probably one of the commanding officers, highly placed in the army, but reporting directly to Abner. So it's possible that Abner figured that Joab just simply wanted to talk it out about his anger over the death of Asahel. He would never have suspected what was coming next because he's been sent away in peace by David to finish his offer of uniting all of Israel under David's throne. So when Abner returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside into the midst of the gate to speak with him privately, and there he struck him in the stomach so that he died for the blood of Asahel, his brother. So he waits until Abner gets up close to him, and then Joab kills Abner in the exact same way that his baby brother Asahel died. That is, being skewered right through the center of the abdomen and right out the backside. Now, he and Abishai feel vindicated at the death of Abner. But that is not how David sees it. David sees this as a betrayal. David sees this as the breaking of oaths that he made. Verse 28, afterward, when David heard of it, he said, I and my kingdom are forever guiltless before he who is for the blood of Abner the son of Ner. May it fall upon the head of Joab and upon all his father's house, and may the house of Joab never be without one who has a discharge, or who is leprous, or who holds a spindle, or who falls by the sword, or who lacks bread. So David puts a curse on Joab, his nephew, and on Abishai, by the way, because Abishai was involved in this, because of what they did. He counts it effectively as a murder. And he wants God to punish them. And you see different things here that have to do with a bad life. The idea of the one that holds a spindle, the concept is to basically be a slave, doing menial labor for someone else. Verse 30, so Joab and Abishai, his brother, killed Abner because he had put their brother Asahel to death in the battle of Gibeon. And so we have got a horrendous situation here with Joab having killed the man who is working on uniting all the tribes of Israel underneath the kingdom of David. And I believe that even though David lets everybody know from the very beginning, I had nothing to do with this, that it probably cools the work on bringing United Israel under David's leadership. Because, as I said, this is all happening in the second year of David's kingdom, when David was still trying to assert himself beyond leadership of the tribe of Judah. And it will not really be until a few years after this that he will be strong enough in leadership over all the tribes that he can take the city of Jerusalem and make it a capital city for all of the tribes. And I think he was still trying to repair the damage done on this day by Abner whenever he takes the city. The damage done by Joab by the murder of Abner on the day that he takes Jerusalem and makes it the united capital. Now, the story is not over with yet because this was bad enough. He can't get rid of Joab. That'll come up in the story later, because Joab is a very powerful man in his own right, because he's so highly placed in the military as a commander. He's got a lot of supporters that would not look kindly upon David executing him. And so David will forego any type of punishment at this point for the murder of Abner. Verse 31. Then David said to Joab and to all the people who were with him, "Tear your clothes and put on sackcloth and mourn before Abner." So he gives this public order. Everybody in my kingdom, including you, Joab, will put on mourning clothes and carry out a mourning ceremony for this man. And then King David followed the bier. So what they're doing is they've taken the body, they've washed it, they've anointed it, they've wrapped it up, and they're now carrying it to the tomb on a stretcher or on this bier. Verse 32, they buried Abner at Hebron. Now, I am curious as to exactly where they did bury him. Remember that the cave of Machpelah at Hebron is the burial site of the patriarchs and the matriarchs. Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and Sarah, and Rebekah, and Leah, they're all buried there in the cave of Machpelah. I wonder whether or not David, to show great honor for Abner, the longtime commander of the united armies of Israel, may have buried him in or near the cave of Machpelah. So they buried Abner at Hebron. The king lifted up his voice and he wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. And the king lamented for Abner, saying, and this takes on the form of a song. So this is like a psalm of lamentation that David composes and perhaps sings during the funeral service. "Should Abner die as a fool dies? Your hands were not bound, your feet were not fettered. As one falls before the wicked, you have fallen." And so you can see that that is a critique very publicly of the actions of Joab and Abishai, even though David still does not take any type of legal action against them. Finishing up verse 34, and all the people wept again over him. And a lot of the people here are the Judeans, the people of the tribe of Judah that had served with Abner. They no doubt have sincere sorrow over his loss, even though they've been fighting kind of against him for the past 2 years. It's much like the Civil War of our own country. You had classmates from the same military academies that ended up on opposite sides during the Civil War. And they grieved over the deaths of their classmates, even though they were on the other side. All right, so that's where we're at here. It's a very difficult time in Israeli history. Verse 35, then all the people came to persuade David to eat bread while it was yet day. But David swore, saying, God do so to me and more also, if I taste bread or anything else, till the sun goes down. So David swore an oath of fasting on this day of Abner's funeral. He will not eat, even though his people are worried about him, because apparently he's looking kind of rough over not eating and taking care of himself. And so all the people took notice of it, that is, of this oath, and it pleased them, as everything that the king did pleased all the people. So all the people and all Israel understood that day that it had not been the king's will to put to death Abner, the son of Ner. So the people, by David's action, can tell that he did not take an active role in this murder. I will note, though, that they would have seen David did not take action against those that committed the murder. And that would not have pleased them, I don't think. And I think that may have caused a little slowdown in making David king over United Israel. So the king said to his servants, do you not know that a prince and a great man has fallen this day in Israel? And I am gentle today, though anointed king. Now, the word gentle is a little bit difficult to understand in this context, I think. The New American Standard uses the word weak, which I think may come a little closer to what David is expressing here. David is effectively saying, even though I am king, I am helpless to do what needs to happen today. And the reason is, the next phrase in the verse, these men, the sons of Zeruiah, are more severe than me. They are tough cookies. They are dangerous characters. That's what he's expressing here. Remember again, they are his nephews, but because they are the sons of his much older sister, they're right around the same age as him. And he's confessing here, I can't do what really needs to happen here, which is their execution. I can't do it. And so the best that he can do is put the curse of God on them. And that's what the last part of verse 39 is. He who is, repay the evildoer according to his wickedness. Now that was all bad enough. It complicated things for David. We've got one more thing that happens that complicates things even more. Chapter 4. When Ishbaal, Saul's son, heard that Abner had died at Hebron, his courage failed and all Israel was dismayed. So he's upset because, you know, Abner was working on the turnover arrangements to turn over the kingdom, and for Ishbaal to kind of return to a more private life without being king anymore. And now that's all out the window. Verse 2, now Saul's son had two men who were captains of raiding bands. The name of the one was Baanah, the name of the other Rechab, sons of Rimmon, a man of Benjamin from Beeroth, for Beeroth also is counted part of Benjamin. The Beerites fled to Gittim and have been sojourners there to this day. So here we have a couple of brothers that were Benjamites working for King Saul and now working for Ishbaal. Verse 4, Jonathan, the son of Saul, had a son who was crippled in his feet. He was 5 years old when the news about Saul and Jonathan came from Jezreel, and his nurse took him up and fled. And as she fled in her haste, he fell and became lame. His name was Merib Baal. Now here it has Mephibosheth, and that's the same changing that later scribes did. We'll come back and talk about him later. He was crippled in the evacuation out of Gibeah. That was 2 years ago. And so now he's about seven. All right, what about the two guys? Now the sons of Rimmon, the Berethite, Rechab and Baanah, set out, and about the heat of the day they came to the house of Ishbaal as he was taking his noonday rest. And they came into the midst of the house as if to get wheat, and they stabbed him in the stomach. And then Rechab and Baanah and his brother escaped. And when they came into the house, as he lay on his bed in his bedroom, they struck him and put him to death and beheaded him. And they took his head and went by the way of the Arabah all night and brought the head of Ishbaal to David at Hebron. Now, we can't finish the full story at this point because of timing, but this is effectively what happened. Two Benjamites, now that they're seeing that Abner is dead and that the kingdom needs to be transferred over to David, they figure that Ishbaal needs to be treated as David's enemy and be executed. So they kill him. They effectively murder him in his bed. They chop his head off, and they take it a couple of days' journey to Hebron to turn it over to David and congratulate him that he is now the undisputed king of United Israel.